This week, a feared gang boss called Barbecue is now believed to be the most powerful man in Haiti as Ariel Henry agrees to step down as prime minister and the country sinks deeper into chaos. Can regional leaders help lead Haiti out of this crisis? And what about Kenya's plans to send thousands of police officers to the Caribbean nation to confront the gangs? Where does Haiti go from here? Straight Talk Africa starts now. Hello there and a warm welcome to Straight Talk Africa. We're coming to you from VOA's headquarters in Washington. I'm Heidi Adams. He is believed to be the most powerful and most feared man in Haiti. Jimmy Cherizier, a.k.a. Barbecue. He's the ex-police officer behind the stunning gang-fueled takeover of the Caribbean nation. On February 9th, armed gangs began attacking key government targets across the capital, Port-au-Prince, and called for Prime Minister Ariel Henry to resign. They burned police stations, closed the main international airport, and raided the country's two largest prisons, setting more than 4,000 inmates free. When Prime Minister Henry attempted to return to Haiti from a recent trip to Kenya, he found himself locked out of the country and stranded in Puerto Rico. On Monday, Henry announced his resignation. Meanwhile, U.S. and Caribbean leaders held a crisis meeting in Jamaica this week to discuss Haiti's path forward. For more about what came out of that meeting, I'm joined now by VOA's correspondent Nike Ching, who is at the U.S. State Department. Nike, thank you very much for joining us. What came out of this crisis meeting in Jamaica where U.S. and Caribbean leaders met to discuss the way forward for Haiti?
Within 24 to 48 hours from Monday's meeting, a presidential transition council will be appointed. So we are looking at either Wednesday or Thursday, and such council will then appoint an interim prime minister, upon which Ariel Henry will resign. So the members of the council will be represented by various political coalitions from Haiti, a private sector, and from the civil community. And members of such a transitional council cannot be charged or indicted or convicted of crimes. They cannot be sanctioned by the United States. At the same time, the United States State Department said that U.S. is in regular contact with current Haiti's finance minister, who is acting prime minister, while Ariel Henry is not in the country.
Now, Nike, what role is the United States prepared to play here in order to help Haiti go forward?
The United States is prepared to increase its commitment for Haiti's security and humanitarian support. Earlier this week on Monday, Secretary of State Antony Blinken has announced that the U.S. will contribute an additional $100 million for a UN-endorsed support mission to Haiti, or known as MSS. And we know that in February, the U.S. has committed $200 million to support such force. So this week's announcement brings the total of U.S. contribution or commitment to the security force to $300 million. In addition, the United States will provide $33 million for humanitarian assistance. One final note here. The United States has emphasized that a political transition process is driven by the Haitian people, not by the U.S. or by the international community.
Now, the U.S. is putting a lot of money here, though. Nike, what's the latest on this multinational force, which to be led by Kenya and, of course, financed by the United States? We know the U.S. has pledged money. Kenya says it has put its plans on hold. But is the United States actually forging ahead with the mission to deploy that mission to Haiti?
State Department spokesperson Matthew Miller has said that, of course, the U.S. will be concerned of any delay of the MSS. But he also said the U.S. does not believe there is a need for such a delay. However, he mentioned that it's natural for Nairobi to want to know that there is a government in Haiti to host the Kenya forces. Meanwhile, another senior State Department official told reporters that the current Haiti's finance minister, Michel Bozois, who is acting prime minister, has expressed his support for the UN-endorsed MSS and all the members who are from Haiti's stakeholder who participated on Monday's meeting have all expressed their support for such mission. He also said there is no further action required from the government of Haiti to authorize the United Nations to deploy such mission. Therefore, the U.S. maintained confidence that Kenya will move forward and such MSS will proceed as based on their conversation with officials in Kenya.
Oh, well, we're going to leave it there. And Nike Ching, VOA's State Department correspondent, thank you so very much. Now, can U.S. and Caribbean leaders help lead Haiti out of this crisis? Daniel Foote is an American diplomat and a former special U.S. envoy to Haiti. He joins me from Buffalo in New York. Ambassador, thank you so very much for being here with us today. Now, of course, you were the U.S. special envoy to Haiti at the time the former president, Jovenel Moïse, was assassinated. That was in 2021. But you resigned from your position in large part because you disagreed with the Biden administration's decision to back Moïse, his successor, Ariel Henry. Why did you think that was a mistake?
Well, not only did the U.S. back Ariel Henry, they anointed him extra-constitutionally 10 days after the assassination. And so from that point on, the Haitian people were very clear to me that he was unelected, illegitimate. He was following a government that had major problems and ties to the gangs. And we knew it would fail. And we've been telling anyone that will hear, shouting from the rooftops for the last 32 months, that he's the wrong way forward for Haiti. Finally, he has resigned and stepped down, removing one of the major impediments to peace in Haiti. But you still have the gangs. And the big impediment now is the international community. As we heard in that report, you're talking about A sitting presidential council that has been chosen by the international community, not by the Haitians. And that is the root of the whole problem here. If we don't let the Haitians build a solid political foundation themselves through some sort of national dialogue here, this will continue to worsen. And the gangs are not going to accept a seven-person imposed presidential council.
Ambassador, what do you think the United States should have done at the outset when there was an opportunity to for change to occur in the country after Moïse's assassination? I mean, how could the dire situation we see in Haiti today have been prevented?
So historically, if we look at Haiti, since they became the only slave republic to gain their independence in 1804, they've never been able to gain their sovereignty because back then, the U.S. was worried that our slaves were going to get ideas from those slaves. So we continue to use the Jeffersonian adage to inform our foreign policy in Haiti, and that is these dumb black people can't govern themselves. Nothing could be further than the truth. Prior to the assassination, a group of civil society and opposition politicians in Haiti had gotten together and started a dialogue process to find a national political consensus. After the assassination, they redoubled their efforts. They found one in 2021. By 2022, it was an adequate consensus, and they will reform something similar if the U.S. and the international community just butts out for 4 to 6 weeks. Haiti's bad. They can't get an international force there in that period anyway, so they should be working on putting a real one together and then follow the Haitian solution. Don't tell the Haitians what the solution is, because this has never worked. In fact, this is the root of Haiti's dire history.
But Ambassador, is some sort of intervention required right now? Is it just a matter of who should help? What do you make of the crisis meeting of regional leaders in Jamaica this week to discuss the framework for a political transition, to set Haiti on a path towards elections, and of course, including a presidential council to help identify a new prime minister? I mean, there's a lot to it. What's your take on what you're seeing happening right now?
Well, my take first on an intervention is I was 100% opposed to an intervention until about 6 or 8 months ago when my friends in Haiti told me it has gotten so bad and the police have become so hollowed out and so many have come to the States under President Biden's new visa program that they need an intervention. However, an intervention that's not backing a Haitian solution, an intervention that's backing someone like Ariel Henry or a leader who is created at gunpoint, and that's what they're doing now figuratively in Jamaica. They got 7 Haitians together that they chose, and they gave them 48 hours to name a prime minister. So basically, they're under gunpoint. The international community ignored this issue for 32 months, and suddenly we have to solve it in 48 hours. We're rushing to failure with more colonialism. Jamaica, Antigua and Barbuda, the United States, France, the UN cannot tell Haiti what to do this time and be successful. History shows us that.
Given that the prime minister, of course, has essentially quit, there's a gang boss seemingly running the show in the capital, how and who should be engaged in Haiti? What do you believe should be the best next steps for the Caribbean nation?
A national dialogue. The Haitians need to come together and resolve this issue that has been foisted on them by the internationals, particularly over the last 32 months, but since their inception, frankly. Without that, you will send an intervention in to back an illegitimate leader of Haiti. And the problem there is that raises a distinct possibility that the peacekeepers may wind up fighting the very people that they're sent to protect, because those people will see the peacekeepers as propping up an illegitimate, not wanted government imposed by the white.
All right, Ambassador Daniel Foote, thank you so much for your time. That was a former U.S. envoy to Haiti, Daniel Foote, speaking to me there from New York. Well, we're going to take a short break here on Straight Talk Africa. And when we come back, Kenya does an about-face on Haiti. What now for its role in the United Nations-backed multinational force deployment to the Caribbean nation? And can African countries play a greater role in helping Haiti? We'll discuss all of that after the break.
In times of change, when the world seems uncertain, and what we hear doesn't reflect what we see, we seek the truth. When we are told only part of the story, we lose trust. In moments of crisis, our dreams, hopes, and wishes for a better tomorrow depend on a free press. At Voice of America, we bring you the stories that people take risks to see. We connect the world and unite it with truth. At Voice of America, we show you the whole picture.
A group of 12 women are recipients of this year's International Women of Courage Award. 3 of them are from Africa. On this week's episode of Our Voices, we will introduce you to Agatha Atuhaire, Fatou Balde, and Rabah El Haimar, 3 women who have demonstrated remarkable courage and determination in advocating for the rights of fellow women. Join the conversation each week right here on Our Voices.
You're watching VOA's Red Carpet. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Thank you so much for joining us each week right here on Red Carpet. We bring you the latest in
You're with Straight Talk Africa. Welcome back. Kenya's plans to send a contingent of police officers to help curb the violence in Haiti are now on hold. This comes after the two nations signed a security agreement in Nairobi last week and before Ariel Henry stepped down as prime minister earlier this week. Emma Jelle has more.
Kenya's government did an about-face on Tuesday, announcing it was pausing a long-delayed deployment of Kenyan police officers to tackle spiraling violence in Haiti. Only 11 days ago, Haitian Prime Minister Ariel Henry and Kenyan President William Ruto signed an agreement that Ruto said would fast-track the deployment of the officers to the Caribbean nation. The jarring turn of events leaves the future of the UN-backed multinational mission for Haiti in serious doubt. Kenya's government first pledged 1,000 officers to lead the security mission last July, but the initiative had been tied up in court challenges ever since. On March 1st, Henry signed an agreement with Kenya's government. The agreement was intended to address concerns raised by a Kenyan judge who had deemed an existing plan unlawful. But Henry was then unable to return to Haiti because of escalating violence.
Haiti besoin la paix.
He has now announced that he would be resigning as soon as a transitional council and temporary leader are chosen. But it was not clear when that might happen with a tenuous security situation in the capital, Port-au-Prince. A senior Kenyan diplomatic official told Reuters on Tuesday that the deployment was on pause pending a clear indication that a new interim government was in place. U.S. officials said on Tuesday that members of the transition council should be appointed within 48 hours, following talks this week in Jamaica between Caribbean leaders and U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken. U.S. officials also said that it was confident the deployment of security forces would still go ahead once Haiti's new leaders were named through a transitional process. According to the United Nations, some 360,000 people are internally displaced and 1,200 have been killed since the start of the year. The Kenyan deployment faced major obstacles well before Henry resigned, including criticism from opposition politicians who characterized the mission as too dangerous and not in Kenya's national interests. Though Kenyan officials have said that the highly trained paramilitary officers were well prepared for the challenges. Kenya had also asked to be paid the cost of the deployment up front. That's contrary to UN rules that require the funds it administers to be used only to reimburse costs already incurred, according to a diplomat in Nairobi and UN officials. They said that Kenya would therefore need to find a country willing to pay it directly. The United States has pledged a total of $300 million to the mission. $100 million of that total was announced on Monday with a senior U.S. official saying it would be used for logistics and equipment and not pass into a dedicated UN fund for the mission. Should transitional leadership be chosen in Haiti, there could also be further legal obstructions to Kenya's deployment. The opposition lawmaker who spearheaded the initial lawsuit has vowed to launch a new challenge. Many Haitian communities and observers are also wary of international interventions after previous UN missions left behind a devastating cholera epidemic and sex abuse scandals, for which reparations were never made.
And that was Emma Jelle from Reuters reporting there for us. Now, for more on what can be done to help lead Haiti out of this crisis, I'm joined by Johanna LeBlanc. She's a partner at Adomi Advisory Group and a former policy advisor to the Haitian government. She joins me here in studio. Johanna, a warm welcome back to Straight Talk Africa. Help us through all of this. And I first want to hear from you what you make of the regional leaders' plans for Haiti. Do they seem poised to get things right this time, or do you see more mistakes in the making?
Well, first and foremost, I applaud the regional leaders for coming together under the leadership of the president of Guyana to find a solution to this crisis in the country. And what they have come up with it's consistent with what the Constitution says in the event that the Haitian Constitution, rather, in the event that there is a vacancy in the presidency. So the Council of Provisoire Conseil that has been put together to appoint a prime minister. I think the process is being done right, but the concerns by so many Haitians on the ground is that during the negotiation process, there was not an inclusion of the Haitian state nor Haitian voice at the table. So people are very concerned. And then also, whether we want to admit this or not, the gangs have essentially toppled the Haitian government. They have been wanting to, not just the gangs, but obviously different sectors across the country have been wanting Prime Minister Ariel Henry to resign from power. And they were unsuccessful at doing so, but the gangs united and were able to topple the government, in essence. So some of them have rejected this proposal by CARICOM because they want to be a part of it. Now, while I don't advocate for those who have been accused or convicted of heinous crimes against humanity to be running the country, but at the same token, you can't leave them out. You have to have a dialogue.
So you're saying they should engage the gangs?
Absolutely, absolutely. Because we see this in different parts of the world, right? When there is a disaster or a crisis between two opposing parties, right? There has to be a conversation with everyone at the table. We look at even here in America, in Detroit, for example, there is a major issue with gangs. And we saw how the mayor came together with the gangs and convinced them and had through dialogue to put down their weapons. And it's not different from what we're seeing in Haiti. You have to engage them in this process or else there will be a continued instability in the country.
But China, isn't there a problem, though, with engaging gangs when, I mean, democratically, who do they represent? Do they represent any segment of the population or any segment of law-abiding citizens?
Well, the reality is that the gangs have formed alliances to fight against the government. In the eyes of some on the ground, the gangs are seen as freedom fighters in the country at this current moment. So again, I'm not advocating for those gang members to be a part of any government, but you do have to negotiate with them and bring them to the table.
To at least bring stability.
Exactly. Find out what do they want? You know, how can we move forward? Because the reality is that this crisis we're seeing on the ground, as I have said on this show before and across the world, and to whomever who are willing to listen, this is a fight about economic opportunities. People want to be able to feed their children. People want to be able to send their kids to school. People want to be able to pursue life, liberty, and happiness. It is not driven by an ideology. So it's not as difficult to fix as it would be in other parts of the region, of the world rather, where some of these insecurity issues are driven by a pure ideology.
So we see Kenya not canceling, but pressing pause on their plans to send police to Haiti. We've discussed this with you on the show before. The U.S. says the mission still seems to be on their end. Why then is Kenya halting their plans, and do you think it is a good idea for Kenya to press pause here?
I think it shows the level of respect that President Ruto has for the people of Haiti, and because there is essentially not a government in place at this moment. So how would it be perceived by the Haitian people to have a foreign mission to come into the country without proper representation? So I think Kenya is doing the right thing. In addition to that, there are challenges, legal challenges in Kenya that the Ruto administration must also overcome. While the administration, the U.S. administration has pledged and has committed to $300 million to go towards the deployment of officers to provide security support to the country. However, there's a $40 million that is currently being held up in Congress by the chair of the House Foreign Affairs Committee and the ranking member of the Foreign Relations Committee because of lack of understanding on how this mission is actually going to be executed and be successful. And as you know, previous missions in Haiti have not worked. The United States occupied Haiti in 1915 for over 20 years, and it was disastrous. And you had the cholera that was brought into the country by the United Nations, and to this day, even though people have died, they have not been compensated. So there are a lot of concerns about whether or not this is going to work. But I think think if we do have the political will, if we do have a plan in place, and if we do address the root cause of the instability in the country, we can find a path forward. And this is also an opportunity for America to change its course and to really be an ally and a partner to the state of Haiti and the Haitian people.
Speaking of opportunities, beyond Kenya's efforts to send police or their willingness to do so, Benin has also said they're up for sending cops as well. Is there an opportunity here for other African countries to do something to help Haiti, especially when so much of the world's security apparatus is focused on China, Taiwan, Russia, Ukraine, Israel, Gaza? Is there an opportunity for African leaders to, on the global stage, come forward and do more for Haiti, if for no other reason other than the historical connection here and sort of kinship that goes back centuries?
Absolutely. I agree. This is why I keep applauding President Ruto, because I think by African countries coming together to work with countries in the Caribbean, not just Haiti, and beyond providing security support, I think we should also consider trade relations between African nations and the Caribbean and Caribbean countries, which is already in place. But I think that we need more of it to strengthen ties. I think it shows a spirit of Pan-Africanism. It shows a spirit of unity. And I think also, too, Kenya was very, very smart early on to commit to providing support, because now the issue of Haiti, the insecurity, has garnered global attention. And guess who we're talking about? Kenya. Kenya is now part of the conversation, right? So now there is a microscope on Kenya and some of its domestic and international affairs, which will bring about certain additional opportunities. And in the case of this mission, what Kenya is going to get out of it, obviously they're going to get new military equipment. Obviously they're getting financing from the United States and other partners. So I think it's a good thing. It's a win-win for everybody. While Kenya provides security support to the country, Kenya would also receive well-needed military equipment for its country.
Do you think there's also an opportunity here for the African Union? And I have to say, we did reach out to the African Union. We asked them, if anything is being done from the region as a bloc to help Haiti, or if they think more should be done. At the time, of course, of our broadcast, we haven't received a response yet. But Joanna, do you think the African Union can, as a bloc, do something, or at least bring countries together to do something for Haiti? Should they?
Well, as we know, the African continent is facing, different countries are facing severe challenges, right? Post-COVID, inflation and the cost of living. And we see countries like Nigeria with the drop in the Naira, who would be considered a leader in this, right? One of the most economically sound countries in Africa. When you look at, South Africa, you look at Kenya, you look at Nigeria and so forth. So I think they have other challenges as a bloc, but I think individual countries, if they do have the resources, the means, and the capacity, by no means, I think it's a good thing for everybody. Nobody loses here.
Absolutely. Joanna LeBlanc, thank you so much for coming in and talking to us. We're going to pick this conversation up in the near future again. We do appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Well, that is our show for this week. Do let us know your thoughts on social media, thanks to all my guests and to the more than 300 affiliate TV and radio stations carrying this show across the African continent. And of course, thanks to you for always joining us on TV, radio, and online. I will see you next time. Until then, it's goodbye.